Good evening, Bristol Bay, and welcome to the Fish Report. Kings in the Nooshigak are late, and the Wood River sockeye are later than the past couple years. The Igooshik crew has finally made it to camp and will begin counting today. And Igigik's escapement and harvest are both below what they were last year. It's Tuesday, June 23rd. I'm your host, Izzy Ross.
Gone fishing. Babble, 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 babble. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Coming up tonight, 12 people tested positive for COVID-19 in Dillingham. They all work for the same seafood company, OBI Seafoods. Over on the west side, there is increasing concern about the late king runs.
Nooshigak sockeye is doing fine. Wood River sockeye is more towards normal versus the last 3 years when it was super early. But everything but kings is looking okay.
Rumors about a connection between imported salmon and coronavirus last week halted European salmon imports to China, but experts say this season COVID-19 is creating bigger problems. We take a look at how the pandemic is affecting the salmon market.
The biggest factors are the sheer operating logistics for this industry in dealing with this virus and keeping the workers safe. That's one huge complexity.
Landing numbers are down across the state, including in Bristol Bay.
As we look across the state of Alaska for some of our key species, we just see that nearly everywhere is slow compared to what we would typically expect when we look at historical data.
We get some context in our fish market update, and we hear what could be in store in the coming weeks. Those conversations and more on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
We're going to take a look at the numbers first thing this evening. No openers yet in the Nooshigak District. That's because of the low king run. The daily count for kings on Monday was 370, bringing the total count today to 10,980 fish. The number of sockeye counted at the sonar site was 15,400, bringing the total count to 73,900 fish. Chums were counted at 440, bringing that total count to 11,000 fish. Cumulative escapement for sockeye is about 30,000 fish behind where it was on this day last year. Yesterday's Wood River escapement was 11,000, bringing that total to 48,400 fish, just about halfway to Fish and Game's escapement goal of 100,000 fish, which they use as a marker for when to open commercial fishing in the wood. The Igooshik Tower did make its schedule on Monday. It arrived yesterday morning, but we don't have any numbers from there yet. We expect those in the next couple of days. In Igigik, 12,600 fish have escaped up the river so far for a total escapement of 34,000. The total run is at 114,500. The daily catch there was 23,000 fish, bringing the total harvest so far this season to 80,500. 150,000 fish from where the harvest was in Igigik at this point last year. Escapement last year had just reached 50,000 in Igigik. The daily escapement in the Naknek Kwijak was 4,100, bringing the total count to 18,000. Harvest there was just 2,900. The total is now 3,000. The Igigik Drift Fleet has caught 85% of the total harvest so far. Set netters have caught 15%. In the Naknek Kwijak, drifters have harvested 64% of that 3,000 fish catch. Naknek set netters have caught 31,000, and Kwijak set netters have caught 31%, and Kwijak set netters have caught 5% of the total catch. The fleet in Togiak caught 100 fish yesterday, bringing the cumulative to 124. The Chignik run is still extremely low. As of 10 a.m. this morning, 370 sockeye had passed through the Chignik weir. Yesterday's count was 3,300, bringing the total to 29,500. The total early run now sits at 29,149. The late run is at 347. Over at Area M, the Chinook harvest is at 2,150. The fleet has harvested 226,800 sockeye. Pink harvest is up to 1.3 million. And chum are at 365,000. Coho remain at just over 200 fish. The Ocean Cat only fished three sets at the Port Muller test fishery yesterday. The largest index was at Station 10 with a catch index of 98. Station 8 had an index of 18, and Station 12 had an index of 17. In an email this morning, technician Scott Rayborn said they should be able to provide summary catch indices from today's fishing this evening. Taking a look at permit and vessel numbers now, we're seeing some increases in both categories on the west side. In the Nooshigak, the registration totals were 274 permits. That's about 39% of the total permit count for the bay. The district had 228 vessels. Those numbers will go up to 304 permits and 249 vessels on Thursday. The number of D-boats is currently 45. That will go up by 9 to 54 D-boats on Thursday morning. Registration in Togiak went up to 25 permits and 25 vessels. As of today at 9 a.m., Igigig had 278 permits. That's almost 40% of the total permits in the bay, right up there with Nooshigak. That'll decrease by 4 to 274 permits on Thursday at 9 a.m. There were 224 vessels in Igigig. That will go down to 220 on Thursday. There are 54 D-boats today, and that stays the same on Thursday in Igigig. In the Naknek-Quijek, there are 119 permits, about 17% of the total count in the bay. There were 104 vessels as of today at 9 a.m. Those numbers will go up to 125 permits on 109 vessels on Thursday. The number of D-boats is 15. It will go up by 1 to 16 on Thursday morning. Finally, in the Ugashik, there are 7 permits and 6 vessels, and that will remain the same both today and Thursday. There is 1 D-boat in Ugashik, and that will remain there until Thursday. Overall, the bay will see an additional 33 permits on Thursday, and 22 more boats will join the fleet. There will be 10 more D-boats. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Fish Report.
Support for the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report comes from GCI, offering connectivity to communities around the state with the latest smartphones and internet packages. A full list of services and store locations at gci.com.
OBI Seafoods confirmed that 12 positive cases of COVID-19 in Dillingham are workers at its Wood River Seafood Processing Plant. The individuals are asymptomatic. All of the workers were in the same cohort when they tested positive on their sixth day of quarantine and moved to isolation facilities at the company's closed campus in Dillingham. Ocean Beauty and Icicle Seafoods recently merged operations, creating the new company, OBI Seafoods. OBI says it is working with the state and local healthcare providers to conduct contact tracing investigations, and the company has contacted other employees who may have come in contact with the individuals. OBI is testing all employees before they get to Dillingham. That's followed by 2 more rounds of testing while in quarantine. In April, Dillingham's city and the Chukayong Tribal Council asked the governor to consider closing the fishery, citing the region's limited healthcare capacity. Free walk-in testing is available to the community at Capstone Clinic in the Dillingham Harbor. Those experiencing any symptoms can call their healthcare provider or the question line at the hospital at 907-842-9440. That helpline is also available to support anyone in Dillingham who has questions or concerns. The Chinook run in the Nooshigak River this year seems to be running late, and there are yet to be any sockeye openers for the Nooshigak District. That's according to Tim Sands, management biologist for the West Side.
Right now, we're just kind of in the wait mode. Mostly, we're waiting on kings. We're trying to be very conservative towards kings because those are definitely late. The Nooshigak sockeye is doing fine. Wood River sockeye is more towards normal versus the last 3 years when it was super early. But everything but kings is looking okay.
Subsistence fishermen in the area say they haven't been catching as many kings as they have in the past years either, and the sonar counter is showing low escapement there as well. Looking at when we'll see a commercial opener, Sand says he's counting on the Wood River.
We're going to wait at least until we have 100,000 sockeye up the Wood River. That could happen tomorrow, or it could take several more days. It all depends on how fast that Wood River escapement increases.
Subsistence catches of sockeye, as well as a survey flown by Fish and Game on Sunday, have indicated that escapement is increasing. This growth means we could see a commercial opener sooner rather than later, but Sand says that escapement has fluctuated more than usual.
we went from like 5,000 a day to 13,000 on Sunday. But then on Monday, it dropped back down to 11,000. It didn't continue to increase like we've normally seen in the past.
Sand says today also seemed slow based on the tower count and subsistence nets. Fish and Game ran another survey today, but he says there probably won't be an opener this evening or tomorrow. Fish and Game manages the run to produce the most economically productive outcome. That means letting fishermen tap the sockeye run, even if the king count is low.
The king escapement is what's forcing us to wait for that 100,000 sockeye up the Wood River. But once we have over 100,000 sockeye up, we have to consider some fishing to control the Wood River sockeye escapement. The king escapement is the driving force behind waiting, but at some point, we can't just let all the sockeye go to protect the kings.
Turning now to the markets. Chinese state media claimed last week that coronavirus was found on chopping boards used for imported salmon. Those rumors halted European salmon imports to China. While that could affect the market for Alaska salmon, experts say this season coronavirus is creating much bigger problems. KDLG's Sage Smiley took a look at how the pandemic is affecting the salmon market and has this report.
Let's hope this is one hell of an anomaly.
That's Gunnar Knapp, Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The market for salmon this year is in flux. Knapp says that's due to functional hurdles.
If you sort of want to categorize the bad news, the biggest factors are the sheer operating logistics for this industry in dealing with this virus and keeping the workers safe. That's one huge complexity. And the second is the drastic drop-off in restaurant consumption. And the third is the drastic decline in people's incomes. Those are the three major hits.
In a normal year, most of the uncertainty in the salmon market comes from the run itself, like how the harvest compares to the previous year and how processors will keep up.
Heck, every year brings surprises in salmon markets and salmon fisheries.
But with the COVID-19 pandemic this year, the market faces uncertainty on both the supply and demand sides. That means a lot of things are up in the air, making everything more difficult to predict. Researcher Brett Watson from UAA says one indicator can be found in the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, which lists permit prices.
CFEC is reporting about a $13,000 slip in Bristol Bay permit price sales from April to May. And so what that says to me is that fishers' short-run and long-run expectations have kind of decreased their value for what they're expecting to get out of the fishery.
That drop has brought permit prices back to where they were in early 2019, a change from the steady rise in prices over the past 3 years. The range of prices is also twice as large as it's been in years. Several Bristol Bay processors have reported cases of COVID-19 since processing workers started arriving in the bay. As the run picks up and the fleet starts catching fish, there are also questions about how those outbreaks will affect processing capability.
I saw that there was a report just a few minutes ago that there were another 12 positive confirmed cases in Dillingham. And that's going to pose real challenges to the processors as they try to figure out how to engage in their process safely. And that can impose real cost for them.
To summarize, on the supply side, the run is starting a little weak. Processors are taking on massive preventative costs to try and stave off plant outbreaks. Those costs might take the form of a lower base price for fishermen or higher retail price for consumers. We don't know much yet about fishing effort compared to last year or processing capacity, which adds another level of uncertainty. On the demand side, the industry is facing a global recession, reduced restaurant demand, lower household incomes, and lower farmed salmon prices, as well as that hiccup in the Chinese market for farmed salmon. That could be an indicator for the wild market. Does everything point to disaster? Gunnar Knapp, the UAA professor emeritus, isn't predicting anything.
There's a lot of not so great indications about the market going into the season. But in the longer run, there's sort of a good news story.
The long-term trend, Knapp says, is an increasing demand in the U.S. for salmon in general and wild salmon in particular.
The basic thing is, you still this tremendously wonderful fish resource if it's well managed and well marketed and well handled and Mother Nature willing.
Despite all the uncertainties facing the market this season, Knapp says they're almost all tied to the pandemic. If Bristol Bay weathers the economic storm this year, he says, hopefully the market will continue to improve. In Dillingham, I'm Sage Smiley.
And this summer, we're going to take a look at different factors affecting the market with the folks at the McDowell Group in our Fish Report segment, The Fish Market. The McDowell Group compiles a weekly salmon update supported by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. This week, I caught up with Garrett Everidge, an economist with McDowell.
I think the big story here is just that if you look throughout Alaska, most salmon fisheries in most areas are slow compared to last year. And historical averages. So that seems to be the story for sockeye, for kita. With pinks, you know, maybe we're a little bit ahead of where we were in 2018 because of Area M with some strong fishing there. But in general, as we look across the state of Alaska, for some of our key species that we would expect to be focused on right now, so that's sockeye, kita, chinook, we just see that nearly everywhere is slow compared to what we would typically expect when we look at historical data.
So you mentioned that, you know, things are slow compared to last year and historically. What are salmon landings looking like across the state? And do you have any numbers from Bristol Bay?
If we just kind of take a big picture snapshot of where we are in 2020, we see harvest of about 2 to 3 million fish through this last Sunday. And so, you know, if we look at previous years, that's a pretty weak number compared to what we've seen. Like last year, we had over 10 million fish landed at this point, primarily due to pinks. So we're definitely on the lower end of where we have been at this point in the season. When we look at sockeye, we see less than a million sockeye been harvested. At this point in the season, that compares to about 2.5 million fish. And so when we think about the regions that are producing most of the sockeye, you know, in the early season, we see Prince William Sound. They've been harvesting fish for going on 5 weeks now. But that harvest starts to taper off as the Alaska Peninsula and Bristol Bay start to ramp up and come online. Some of those early fisheries in those two areas, you know, we've seen fish come out of there, but it has been slow. You know, Bristol Bay is pretty slow. Harvest of about 70,000 fish year to date. That compares to right under a million fish at this point last year. You know, Kodiak produces a relatively modest amount of fish at this point in the season. They're at 38,000 fish so far. That compares to about 53,000 fish at this time last year. So they're down, but not significantly. Cook Inlet also down, but not as bad as Prince William Sound. You know, Prince William Sound is about 70% lower than 2019, and that's in line with some longer time horizons too. Yeah, you know, just less fish, less fish coming out of these Alaska fisheries. Kita, you know, right at the point where in a typical year we've harvested almost an equal amount of sockeye and kita. Over the next few weeks, we would anticipate that sockeye number to expand here. But with kita, we have just under 800,000 fish harvested so far. That's about half of where we were last year. There are pockets in Prince William Sound that have been pretty productive, but the overall regional number is down about 70%, kind of matching that sockeye number. Area M, they're actually equal or maybe a little bit ahead of where we were last year. And, you know, we should also note that these are all in-season numbers that we're using as we talk about 2020. These numbers can change. They can be revised. So there's definitely some messiness as we try to characterize what's going on currently. These numbers are often revised upwards.
Right. So they're not set in stone. You know, we might be seeing these weaker numbers at the beginning of the season, but obviously that could change relatively quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that if you step back and kind of look at the typical calendar, like a typical Alaska salmon season starting in May, concluding in October, the majority of our fish are really harvested in July and August. So less than 10% of the annual salmon harvest is typically observed in May and June. And a single strong week in Bristol Bay can equal the total statewide harvest in May and June. So, you know, once we start to see these key fisheries, that statewide number can really recover quickly to kind of where we would expect. But, of course, that doesn't really change, you know, some of these more regional or local fisheries that might not be able to recover.
Do you have any examples of those regional or local fisheries? You know?
Yeah, the best one right now is Copper River Drift. You know, they are 5 weeks into their season, and at a certain point, we just run out of time to see a recovery kind of back to the norm. You know, the sockeye projection for the area wasn't very strong in the first place, but, you know, at the end of the season, we could end up with a total harvest number that's satisfactory, but that might, you know, that would include areas that have been really strong, but also it could include areas that have been weak. So it, you know, it's a nuanced thing. We just focusing on that top line number doesn't really tell the entire story.
Garrett, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk through what you all are looking at over there at the McDowell Group.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Support for KDLG and the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report comes from Hatton Marine in Ballard, Washington, supporting and servicing the Bristol Bay fishery for the last 20 years. Parts and service requests online at hattonmarine.com or 888-283-5639.
That does it for the show tonight. Of course, you can always go on to kdlg.org and listen back or just read the show when we post it this evening. We're going to take a look at the marine weather forecast, and we have a message from the fleet as well. In the forecast for Bristol Bay, tonight a southwest wind at 15 knots, seas at 3 feet. On Wednesday, a south wind at 15 knots, seas at 3 feet, and rain. Wednesday night, variable wind less than 10 knots and seas at 2 feet. In the marine weather forecast from Port Hyden to Cape Sarachef, a variable wind at less than 10 knots tonight, seas at 3 feet. On Wednesday, a variable wind at less than 10 knots, seas at 3 feet. And Wednesday night, variable wind less than 10 knots, seas remaining at 4 feet. In the tidal forecast at Nushagak at Clark's Point, low tide at 11:56 p.m. at 0.7 feet. At the Naknek River entrance, high tide was at 3:32 p.m. at 16.1 feet. And at the Igigik River entrance, low tide tonight at 10:32 p.m. at -1.3 feet. In messages to the fleet, to Ty Babb, fishing vessel homeward, happy birthday, Ty. Good fishing would be your best present. Good luck. Stay safe out there. LOL, Mom. If you'd like to get in touch or give some perspective, give us a call, 842-2200. You can also send an email to fish@kdlg.org. That's for messages to the fleet. If you'd like to talk to us about a fishing issue or just for some perspective, go ahead, 842-2200 or fish@kdlg.org. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible with the generous support of our underwriters and individual contributions from you, the fishing fleet. We appreciate it. That's all for tonight, folks. For the fishing song today, we have one from Paul on the fishing vessel Sal C. He's sending the song Big Whiskers from Otis Gibbs out to Parker on the fishing vessel Daga Bay. Good night, good fishing, see you back here tomorrow.
When I was just a teen, Grandpa'd sit down next to me, tell me about the time Big Whiskers got away. From the broad ripple spillway to the Waverly Bridge, there's been tall tales, rumors, urban legends, and myths about a world record flathead that some say has never been caught. Sometimes he was spotted in White River with flood, as big as a coffin laying up in the mud. His name is Big Whiskers, and he's the toughest cat that ever fought. As the story goes, the grandpa was a kid. He was checking a trout line by the Southport Bridge. He thought it was snags, so he leaned down to take a look. The water started to boil, bubble, and churn as the flathead monster came to the surface and turned, headed straight to deep water and got away by straightening the hook. When the word got round by the cat he'd seen, everybody laughed and refused to believe, and they echoed him every time that he walked by. He swore right then to everybody's face he'd clear his name and put them in their place. He vowed never to shave until proven it wasn't a lie. He fished every day as the years rolled past and became more obsessed with every cast. He'd head straight to the river when Grandma would let him outdoors. After a while, the beard covered his face, and 10 years later, it was down to his waist. By the time he retired, it was almost reaching the floor. When he walked into town, people's jaws would drop, and some loudmouth kid would holler ZZ Top, but he didn't pay attention, he just kept on walking by. He'd head straight to the river and throw in some bait and wade through the water and patiently wait for the day Big Whiskers would swallow at the end of his line. When I was just a teen, Grandpa sat down next to me. Tell me about the time Big Whiskers got away. He had a secret recipe no cat could resist. He never wrote it down or even made a list. It was trial and error, and he never trusted anyone. He'd put livers and gizzards and shad entrails and some Limburger cheese just to pep up the smell, and coagulated blood stirred in with a black cat bone. He filled mason jars so they wouldn't leak and set them out in the sun for at least a week. They had to ferment so he couldn't take them in too soon. Then he took them to an Indian burial ground, dug as deep as he could so they wouldn't be found, and said the Lord's Prayer and dug them up by the light of the moon. Some people treat fishing as a chance to get drunk, but to him it was religion and he never gave up. And the stories about Big Whiskers just seemed to grow. They say he sank 3 boats and 1 man drowned. He ate 10-pound bass and gobbled ducks down. Grandpa became the butt of every joke. On a cloudy day like many before, he was wading through the shallows up along the shore, north of Raymond Street by a railroad overpass. Fished half the day without a bite, decided to head home and call it a night. But before giving up, he threw in one more cast. When he felt something pulling on the end of his line, he set the hook and he let out of sight. Convinced himself he was snagged on a rock or a stump. Then he pushed in the button on his Zepco reel and started walking backwards to the top of the hill. He saw his line moving sideways and he knew that he wasn't hung up. You could hear his track singing from a mile away, and the fiberglass rod was about to break as the fish started pulling and stretching the monofilament line. He was running downstream and his line went slack, and the cat swam toward him up in the riprap. That's when he got a glimpse of Big Whiskers with his own 2 eyes. He could feel his heart begin to race. It went deeper in the water and he tried to chase an enormous flathead catfish up towards the sand. Well, it must have confused the ancient cat, cause he ran aground in the weeds and he sat up out of the water all helpless on dry land. Well, he strained and pulled with all of his might and then drug that old cat up the riverside, sat down in the gravel and the sand to try to catch his breath. When he leaned towards his head to get a better look, his beard got tangled in the rusted hooks that the battered old flathead had buried in his lips and his head. Grandpa Winston felt the pain of too many years pursuing in vain a silly old fish that would rather be left alone. Well, I guess it was then that Grandpa snapped and started feeling guilty, and he foolishly laughed and he reached in his box for his best pair of needle nose. They pulled every hook out of Big Whiskers' face and drug him back in the river and watched him swim away. Pulled out the scissors and started cutting the hair off his chin. Never said a word about what went down, but everybody knew as he walked into town that there's only one thing that could make him shave his beard. For the first time in years, he was truly alive, and he gave up fishing, and after he died, we scattered his ashes on the banks of the wide river. Some folks claim at the bottom of the dam is a world record cat and a mean old man, resting in peace for the first time in too many years. When I was just a teen, Grandpa sat down next to me. Tell me about the time Big Whiskers got away. Tell me about the time Big Whiskers got away.